Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Wednesday, March 31st, 2021. I'm your reader, Catherine Moyers. The headline on the front page is Home Values Up Despite Derecho and Disease by Gage Miskimen. Despite disease and a derecho, home values across the corridor have increased as much as an average 7.5%. As the real estate market defied early expectations and remained strong. Local assessors have mailed out notices to thousands of property owners that reveal one of the key factors that figures into how much a property tax bill they will face. Not every property owner will get a notice, only those whose valuations changed. The assessed value combines with three other factors to determine an owner's property tax bill: the tax rate that local governments and school districts set every spring, the rollback rate announced by the state that dictates how much of a property's value is subject to taxes, and any exemptions for which a property owner qualifies. These latest assessments do not affect what property owners will pay in property taxes this coming fiscal year, which starts July 1. That has already been set. Rather, assessments lag. The taxes associated with these latest assessments are due in September 2022 and March 2023. By then, local governments and school districts will have announced their tax rates and the state will have set the rollback rates. In Linn County, except Cedar Rapids, the value of residential properties assessed has increased at an average of 7.5%, according to the Linn County Assessor's Office. The county office assesses every city in the county except Cedar Rapids, which has its own assessor's office. Few properties had a smaller increase than average, and many properties had double, the valuation notice to owners said. The change is based on 1,534 sales that occurred in 2020. Linn County Assessor Jerry Witt said he tries to keep the value change as low as possible. Quote, "We try to have our value be at market value," Witt said. "We just set them and we are already falling behind the market with changes and sales we've seen in just 2.5 months," unquote. Witt said he is surprised that the residential market has continued to increase, even after the start of the COVID-19 pandemic. Due to low mortgage interest rates, reduced inventory, and higher sales of prices of property, some may see an increase in property tax assessments this year, Witt said. Quote, "When COVID started hitting, I thought the market would start dropping," Witt said. "With increases over the last few years, I thought we would at least take a pause. But the demand stayed the same due to low interest rates. And that's not just local. It's statewide and national. Everyone is saying the same thing," unquote. Though everyone has been trying to cope with the pandemic, not everyone experienced the August 10, 2020 derecho to the same degree. The cost of building materials already increased due to the pandemic, but locally the derecho increased costs even more. "It was tough to find materials, and when you did, they were expensive," Witt said. "And there weren't enough contractors for all of the demand. All of this pushed values up," unquote. Multi-residential properties in the county saw an average increase of 14%. There were 29 sales in the last 2 years used for the assessment. Agricultural property received an average increase of 7%. Commercial property sales in the county were mostly stable, seeing an average decrease of less than 1%. Any Linn County property owner can request an informal review of the assessment from Friday to April 26th. Assessments also can be formally appealed. The Board of Review's filing period is Friday through April 30th. Petitions can be obtained at the assessor's office or at lynn.iowaassessors.com. In Cedar Rapids, residential properties in the city that were assessed receive an overall median increase of 4.5%, according to a news release from the city's assessor's office. For commercial properties, that increase is 0.5%, and multi-residential properties will see a 14.5% increase overall. Damage stemming from the derecho caused a reduction in value for some properties, a city assessor, Julie Carson, said. But depending on the area's market value activity, the property owner may still see an increase in the assessment. After the assessor's office has applied an adjustment to a property for derecho-related damage, Karen said the office will review that annually to determine if the adjusted assessment still is needed for 2022. Repairs made after January 1st of this year will be reflected in the 2022 assessment. Residents should submit damage details to the assessor's office online. If the property owners believe the assessment does not reflect the market value of their property, contact the Cedar Rapids City Assessor's Office. The office will conduct an informal appeal and review period from Friday through April 26th. The form to petition the Board of Review can be found at cedarrapids.iowaassessors.com, or property owners may contact the Assessor's Office at 319-286-5888 to request the form. In Johnson County and Iowa City, the derecho, which has felt worse outside of Johnson County, will not impact assessments for most residents in the county, assessors said. Quote, we handled the derecho individually, but did not have many properties that had damages to structures that required value changes, said Johnson County Assessor Tom Van Buer. Most damages were repaired by our January 1st date of assessment, unquote. The average increase in assessed residential property value was 7% across the county, including the cities of Coralville and North Liberty, Van Buer said. Iowa City Assessor Brad Comer said his office did not make specific adjustments to assessments based on the derecho. Quote, if the derecho had an impact in Iowa City, it would be reflected in the sales prices, Comer said. Our assessments were adjusted based on how assessments compared with properties that have sold over the past year, unquote. The average value increase for single-family homes in Iowa City was 3.17%, Comer said. The Iowa City Assessor's Office has more information at iowacity.iowaassessors.com and Johnson County by following links at johnsoncountyiowa.gov. The next article is entitled Tweaks to New Iowa Election Rules Possible by James Q. Lynch. Lawmakers seek bipartisan support for changes. The dateline is Des Moines. After contentious floor fights over a bill Democrats charged was intended to suppress voting and Republicans framed as protecting election integrity, an Iowa House committee chairman believes he can get bipartisan support for a measure that might modify some of those changes. Quote, I acknowledged on the floor of the House during the election bill about a month ago that there are going to need to be some clarifications and some changes, House State Government Chairman Bobby Kaufman, Republican of Wilton, said Tuesday during discussion of Senate File 568. I found this bill to be the vehicle for those changes. My goal is to make this a bipartisan bill to take everyone's opinions into account, unquote. Kaufman told a subcommittee he's open to addressing some of the issues Democrats raised when Republican majorities passed the elections bill, SF-413 by 3018 and 57-37 in the Senate and House, respectively. Earlier this month, Governor Kim Reynolds signed Senate File 413 into law. Among other changes in the state elections law, the measure reduces the number of days for early voting, restricts absentee voting, and threatens county auditors with fines and jail time if they break the requirements. Representative Bruce Hunter, Democrat of Des Moines, who tangled repeatedly with Kaufman during floor debate on SF-413, Tuesday reiterated his, quote, grave concern with portions of that bill. Among other provisions, Democrats objected to a ban on anyone other than a voter, immediate family member, or caretaker returning completed absentee ballots, and a requirement that absentee ballots be received in a county auditor's office no later than Election Day even if postmarked earlier. He thinks the caretaker issue can be resolved with, quote, something as simple as some kind of a receipt, unquote, but warned that before there is bipartisan agreement, the deadline for absentee ballots to be returned must be addressed. Quote, it is my firm belief that if somebody sends in an absentee ballot on time, fills it out correctly, has all the I's dotted, T's crossed, it should be counted, unquote, Hunter said. Those are my two big issues that have to be resolved before we can call this bipartisan, unquote. Kaufman agreed that the issue of caretakers, someone other than the voter returning an absentee ballot, can be addressed as well as giving auditors authority to reject requests for satellite voting if they are duplicative, too costly, or not widely accessible. Hunter said it makes him nervous to pass something out of committee with a promise to fix it later in floor debate. Kaufman insisted Senate File 568, which would address the election changes, won't pass as is. Quote, my goal in the end is for this bill to pass the Iowa House with a wide bipartisan margin, hopefully to a unanimous margin, and that version be agreed to by the Senate and sent down to the governor's desk, Kaufman said. Quote, I will do whatever I can to work with Representative Kaufman to make sure we have one of those bipartisan bills, Hunter said, but he urged Democrats to vote against the bill until that bipartisan agreement was reached. Committee approved the bill on a party-line vote. Senate File 568 is what's known as a technical bill that makes fixes in several parts of state election law. During the subcommittee hearing, representatives heard from the Iowa Hospital Association, which supported the bill because it included changes affecting the election of trustees, and from community colleges, which warned the bill would add, quote, undue, unneeded expense to already pricey referendums. Kaufman added that to his list of negotiables. The next article is Positive Case Tally Surpasses 350,000 in Iowa by Kat Russell. The state adds 591 new COVID-19 cases. More than 350,000 Iowans have tested positive for COVID-19 since the coronavirus first appeared in Iowa last March. The state added 591 new COVID-19 cases Tuesday, according to data from the Iowa Department of Public Health, bringing the total of Iowa's cases to 350,326. The new additions came from 14,487 tests analyzed between 11 a.m. Monday and 11 a.m. Tuesday, making for a 24-hour positivity rate of 4.57%. The state's 7-day average for new cases is 575. Of Tuesday's new cases, 89 were of children aged 17 and younger, raising the total for that age group to 40,301. No new deaths were reported Tuesday. The state's death toll remained at 5,729. The state reported 566,989 Iowans were fully vaccinated against COVID-19 as of Tuesday afternoon, an increase of 6,506 from Monday. That's 17.97% of all Iowans and 22.59% of all adult Iowans 16 and older. Within the state, including non-Iowans, 590,104 people have been fully vaccinated. State data shows 550,868 people in Iowa have completed the Moderna or Pfizer two-dose vaccine, while 39,236 have received the one-shot Johnson & Johnson vaccine. To date, 1,488,156 vaccine doses have been administered in Iowa, with 1,433,279 shots going to Iowans. In Linn County, 109,745 vaccine doses have been administered, and 43,814 people have been completely vaccinated as of Tuesday afternoon. That's 24.28% of people ages 16 and older. In Johnson County, 87,720 shots have been given, with 34,666 people fully vaccinated. That's 27.89% of the county's adult population. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, 147,602,345 vaccines had been administered nationwide as of 6 a.m. Tuesday. A total of 53,423,486 people, or 16.1% of the nation's population, are fully vaccinated, CDC data shows. As of 11 a.m. Tuesday, 186 people were being treated for COVID-19 in Iowa's hospitals, a decrease of 10 from the day before, and the number of patients in intensive care went from 44 to 45. The number of patients on ventilators ticked up Tuesday from 9 to 11. The number of COVID-19 outbreaks in Iowa's long-term care facilities, defined as 3 or more cases among residents and staff, remained at 2 Tuesday, with 14 people being treated for the virus. Since the beginning of the pandemic, 2,234 people have died from the virus in the state's long-term care facilities. That's equivalent to roughly 39% of the state's total death toll. 211 vaccine hotline expanded in Iowa, by Michaela Ram. Iowans with an underlying medical condition can now use the state's vaccine navigator services to schedule a COVID-19 shot through the 211 hotline. State officials announced Tuesday that any Iowan who qualifies for the vaccine but faces barriers to finding an appointment can reach a vaccine navigator by calling 211 or 800-244-7431. Those who currently qualify for a vaccine in the state are those 65 and older and those 64 and younger with an underlying health condition. Previously, services through 211 had been available only to older Iowans. Vaccine navigators are available from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. 7 days a week. Translation services are available, according to the news release. The state also announced Tuesday that 211 is partnering with Hy-Vee to host a massive COVID-19 vaccine clinic for Iowans 65 and older and people with underlying health conditions. Qualifying health conditions are outlined on the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention website. The clinic, which will be from 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday, will offer the Pfizer vaccine. The clinic will be at Community Choice Credit Union Convention Center, 833 Fifth Avenue in Des Moines. Appointments are required. To schedule, call 211 or 800-244-7431. It is recommended that people attending the clinic bring a photo ID, an insurance card, and a Medicare card if they have them. People who don't have insurance or a photo ID still can be vaccinated, the news release states. Iowa's Ride now set as weekend event. Once envisioned as a new version of the venerable Ragbri, Iowa's Ride has deflated from a week-long bike trek across the state to a long weekend around Eldora. Organizers posted Tuesday on Facebook that the ride now is scheduled for July 16 through 18. Quote, Iowa's Ride Weekender will now take place in Eldora, with camping and evening fun on Friday and Saturday, July 16th and 17th. There will be a designated 40 to 50-mile route on Saturday and several riding options to enjoy on Friday and Sunday, the announcement said. In addition to great riding, relax while floating in a tube down the Iowa River and cool off at the city pool located in the main camping area at the Eldora Municipal Park, unquote. In October 2019, the longtime director of the Register's annual Great Bicycle Ride Across Iowa, T.J. Juskiewicz, left in a falling out with the Des Moines Register. He announced he was forming his own summer 2020 ride, which ultimately was planned to go from east to west for 416 miles across Iowa, But the coronavirus pandemic spelled an end to that, as it did for any 2020 RAGBRAI, too. RAGBRAI earlier announced that a west-to-east, river-to-river bike ride is back on from July 25th through 31st this year. In its announcement Tuesday, Iowa's Ride said several of the schools and communities it had contacted for the 2021 route were, quote, still not comfortable opening their facilities needed for overnight camping throughout this upcoming summer, unquote. Organizers last year said they would refund most of the registration fee bicyclists had paid for the canceled ride. Tuesday, they said that if riders had registered for the 2020 ride, there would be no registration fees for this year's event. Quote, if you have friends that would now like to register, it still is a free entry, but we encourage them to make a donation to the Eldora Rotary, they wrote. Juskowitz announced last year on Facebook that he was leaving Iowa to become executive director of a bicycle event in Tucson, Arizona. Garbage truck driver arrested after hit and run on Highway 30 by Kat Russell. Deputies in Linn County had to chase down a garbage truck Monday after it rear-ended a vehicle and kept driving, the sheriff's office said. The hit-and-run crash happened on U.S. Highway 30 in Cedar Rapids when a Toyota Corolla driven by Gary Sams of Anamosa slowed for a funeral procession on Highway 30 near Knapp Road. The car was struck from behind by a refuse truck driven by Robert Truax, 61, of Marion, according to the Linn County Sheriff's Office. Major Chad Colston of the Sheriff's Office said it appears Truax attempted to swerve to avoid hitting the Corolla, clipping the passenger's car's back end before driving into the median and then back onto the roadway. Colston said the truck belonged to A1 Disposal Services, Inc., where Truax is employed. Sams was transported to a hospital for treatment of non-life-threatening injuries, the sheriff's office said. Colston said the truck driver tried to continue driving on Highway 30 until he was stopped by deputies who were at traffic control posts for the funeral procession. Truax was taken into custody under suspicion of driving while intoxicated. Colston said Truax told the officers, quote, he thought he avoided an accident by taking the median, unquote. Truax refused to take a breathalyzer test, according to the criminal complaint. He faces one count of operating a motor vehicle while under the influence of an alcoholic beverage, second offense. The complaint states Truax previously was convicted of OWI on December 13, 2012. Growth during trying times. By Gage Meskimen. Dateline is Marion. In the first state of the city address since the COVID-19 pandemic and the derecho, Marion Mayor Nick Abu-Assali reflected on the city's growth and how the city has aimed to overcome nature's challenges. The mayor, during a broadcast from Marion's new YMCA building, said Marion residents should be proud of how the community responded to the pandemic and the derecho. Quote, these challenges weren't predicted or in our control, unquote, Abu-Assali said, but how we choose to confront them made all the difference for the community. Marion formed a recovery task force that included local government officials, healthcare and mental health professionals, business and economic development schools, human service agencies, and faith communities. Since the start of the pandemic, the task force has supplied 4,800 masks to local schools, started a community cash program that infused $20,500 into the local economy, held a juice box donation drive for thousands of meals served by Feeding Lunches to Youth, and held various public service campaigns on social media. Abu-Assali never issued a mask mandate during the pandemic. Instead, he issued a mask advisory, encouraging residents to wear masks in public places and businesses. Quote, COVID-19 will have a lasting impact on our lives, but the August 10th derecho will forever be etched into our collective memory, not only as the greatest natural disaster in Marion's history, but also as one of Marion's finest moments, unquote, Abu Asali said. In the initial response to the derecho, Marion set up a command center at City Hall, and a part of Marion Square Plaza was transformed into a food pantry. As of December, Marion had lost 2,648, or 41.5% of its public trees due to the derecho. City officials are working with Trees Forever to begin replanting efforts this spring, starting in Hanna Park and along 8th Avenue. The replacement costs for lost public trees is just under $400,000. Quote, I was grateful for and inspired by the exemplary way in which Marionites united around a common purpose and our shared humanity as we quickly assessed the damage, rolled up our sleeves, and attended to each other's needs, unquote, Abu Asali said. As 2020 was a year that brought racial equity issues to the forefront across the country, Abu Asali said that Marion also was reminded that no community is immune to the impacts of racism. Purveyors of hate don't represent the true heart of Marionites, Abu Asali said. Every individual has the potential to add value to our community. Diversity is a strength that should be celebrated. Last year, the city formed a community equity and inclusion task force that includes city officials, Marion Alliance for Racial Equity members, as well as other community members. Multiple large-scale projects have moved forward despite everything that happened in 2020, from the new Marion Library to the 7th Avenue Streetscape Project and the new fire station. Other projects include the Broad and Main development, the Uptown Plaza, and the construction of Prairie Hill Park. Marion's new YMC opened in January, and 40 new businesses have opened. Additionally, 12 housing subdivisions are under development in Marion. The city also added 278 new homes and housing units in the past year. This year, two large multifamily residential complexes will be built, one on 5th Avenue and the other on the site of the former YMCA. Quote, the city's targeted efforts and long-term vision of helping the central corridor redevelop from industrial uses to more commercial uses are paying off, unquote, Abu Asali said. You are listening to a reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Wednesday, March 31st, 2021, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. Tate Bradley Schaefer, Williamsburg. Tate Bradley Schaefer was born August 13, 2007 at Mercy Hospital in Iowa City to Brad and Darcy Schaefer. Celebration of life services will be held at 10:30 a.m. Friday, April 2nd at the Williamsburg High School gym. The service will be live streamed on YouTube Williamsburg CSD Raiders. Pastor Richard Meyer will officiate. Burial will be in the Emmanuel Lutheran Cemetery. Visitation will be from 2 to 7 p.m. Thursday at the Williamsburg High School gym. Please show your support and wear Tater Tough gear. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be given to the Tater Tough Fund at P.O. Box 689, Williamsburg, Iowa, 52361. Powell Funeral Home in Williamsburg is caring for Tate and his family. Messages and tributes may be directed to powellfuneralhomes.com. Robert Francis Hoffman, Guttenberg. Robert Francis Hoffman, 91, of Guttenberg, Iowa, passed away peacefully at home, surrounded by his loving family. He was born April 17, 1929, in Earlville, Iowa, the son of Leo and Dorothy Hoffman. Arrangements are being held by Tukey Allen Funeral Home, 207 South 1st Street, Guttenberg. Due to COVID-19 concerns, there will be a private family service. There will be a public memorial service at a later date. In lieu of flowers and all styles of sympathy, memorials may be sent to either St. Croix Hospice, 101 Alcater Street, Strawberry Point, Iowa, 52076, or the Guttenberg Municipal Hospital, 200 Main Street, Guttenberg, Iowa, 52052. Keith Keller, St. Charles, Minnesota. Keith Keller, 89, of St. Charles, Minnesota, died Monday, March 29, 2021, in St. Charles. Burial will be later in Hillside Cemetery in St. Charles. There will be no service at this time. Please direct memorials for Keith's family to Hoff Funeral Home, P.O. Box 576, St. Charles, Minnesota, 55972. Please share a memory of Keith and view his video tribute when it becomes available at hofffuneral.com. Vonna Robertson, Iowa City. Vonna Robertson died peacefully at Oak Knoll Residence on March 28, 2021. Online condolences may be made at lensingfuneral.com. Davis W. Johnson, Decorah. Davis W. Johnson, 76, of Decorah, Iowa, died Saturday, March 27, 2021, peacefully in his sleep, surrounded by his loving family at home after a courageous battle with cancer. Private family funeral services will be held at 10:30 a.m. Friday, April 2nd, at Washington Prairie Lutheran Church in rural Decorah, with the Reverend Dr. Jennifer Ettinger officiating. Burial will be in the church cemetery. Public visitation to greet family will be from 3 to 7 p.m. Thursday, April 1st, at Fjellstall Funeral Home in Decorah. In consideration of concerns regarding COVID-19, wearing of a mask and social distancing is required. John Mark King, Jr., Wellman, Iowa. John Mark King, Jr. was born October 7, 1931, near Wellman, Iowa, the son of John M. King, Sr. and Mary Marner King. A celebration of life services will be held at 1:30 p.m. Saturday, April 3, 2021, at the West Union Mennonite Church, rural Parnell. Burial will be in the West Union Mennonite Cemetery. Visitation will be Saturday from 10 a.m. until service time. Memorial funds will be given to Mennonite Central Committee and Mennonite Disaster Service. Powell Funeral Home is caring for John and his family. Messages and tributes may be sent to the family at powellfuneralhomes.com. Ron Ellis, Iowa City. Ron Ellis passed away peacefully at home on March 25, 2021. A celebration of life will be held at a later date. To leave a thought, memory, or condolence with Ron's family, please visit the funeral home website, gayandsia.com. In other notices, Belle Plaine, Norma Jean Chilcote, 85, died Tuesday, March 30th, 2021. Hrabach Newhouse Funeral Service, Belle Plaine. Cedar Rapids, Florence Shoemaker, 92, died Monday, March 29th, 2021. Cedar Memorial Park Funeral Home, Cedar Rapids. Bradley Thompson, 65, died Monday, March 29, 2021. Cedar Memorial Park Funeral Home, Cedar Rapids. Waukon, Janet Palmer, 66, died Sunday, March 28, 2021. Martin Grau Funeral Home, Waukon. And in Wyoming, Iowa, Beverly Brownell, 76, died Sunday, March 28, 2021, at Cedar Memorial Park Funeral Home, Cedar Rapids. The obituary index in today's Gazette, Albernette Diane Lynn Arnold. Decorah Davis W. Johnson. Guttenberg Robert Francis Hoffman. Iowa City Ron Ellis. Vonna Robertson. Wellman John Mark King Jr. and Williamsburg Tate Bradley Schaefer. And the last obituary is Diane Lynn Arnold, Albernette. Diane Lynn Arnold, 69, of Albernette, Iowa, passed away peacefully surrounded by her family on Sunday, March 28, 2021, at her home. A private funeral mass will be held on Tuesday, April 6, 2021, at St. Stephen's Catholic Church in Central City, Iowa, with the Reverend Nick March officiating. Interment will take place at Mount Calvary Cemetery in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. All guests are respectfully requested to wear a face mask and practice social distancing. Murdoch Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Marion is assisting the family. A recording of the funeral mass will be available late Tuesday afternoon on the funeral home website tribute page for Diane under photos, and videos or media. Now turning to the sports page and college volleyball, Nelson and the Eagles Move On by Justin Webster. The number 5 Kirkwood Eagles defeated number 7 DMAC 33-1 last night at Johnson Hall in the Region 11B final to move one game closer to a berth in the NJCAA 2 tournament held in Cedar Rapids on April 13th through 15th at the Alliant Powerhouse Arena. Next, the Eagles will face Iowa Central, who defeated Hawkeye Community College 3-1 in the Region 11A final. The winner advances to the national tournament next month. Winning consistently in all sports has helped Kirkwood recruit local athletes with championship pedigree, including sophomore Rachel Nelson, who learned how to win and lose at Solon. Quote, "I had great coaches," Nelson said, "so I learned the ups and downs of the game pretty quick," unquote. The great leadership that Eagles head coach Jill Williams has provided at the next level for local athletes over the last 16 years also continues to impact players like Nelson as they prepare to become influential to their students' lives themselves. Quote, "On my visit, I absolutely loved the campus and my coaches," Nelson said. "I felt so at home with my teammates," unquote. Now, Nelson is preparing to graduate and move on to a 4-year school where she plans on continuing her volleyball career before becoming an elementary school teacher. Quote, "I'd like to go back and teach at Solon," Nelson said, "be either a head coach or an assistant for volleyball. I definitely want to be involved in the game," unquote. She also knows she'd like to teach kindergarten. "They're still young and I don't really know how to talk back, and you're one of the biggest influences in their life," Nelson said. "I love the idea of that," unquote. Even though Nelson has been surrounded by positive influences, her biggest are her parents, Todd and Stephanie. "My parents have taught me everything I know about hard work," Nelson said. She's not alone either, as the Eagles believe they have what it takes to make an even deeper run into the postseason. They just sit 4 victories from another national title. Quote, "I knew coming into the year we had a lot of talent," Nelson said. "We just needed to learn how to apply it. We're still waiting on our other banner to be put up, and we're ready to see 2 up there." In girls' tennis, Union's Weber, eager to resume a sport she loves, by Mike Condon. The dateline is La Porte City. A suggestion from a family friend quickly turned into a passion for Alexa Weber. The Union Community High School junior was one of the smaller kids in her class, so it was suggested that she give tennis a try. "I immediately fell in love with the game," she said. That love has grown. In 2019, she joined the Union team as a freshman, although she had not played competitive matches. She didn't know what to expect. All she did was go 12-7 in matches, with 5 of her 7 losses coming to players who went on to play at state. The momentum came to a halt when COVID-19 forced the cancellation of the 2020 season. Quote, "Just as it was for everyone, missing last year's season was a huge disappointment," said Union coach Aaron Wittenberg. "Having missed all of the 2020 season, it will be interesting to see what talent will emerge, as a lot of growth can happen in 2 years. Weber, one of 5 returning regulars from the Knights' 2019 team, admitted she missed playing in 2020. "I'm a competitive person, so playing a match is one of my favorite things to do," she said. "Living in Iowa, it is difficult to work on my game in the off season, but when the season was canceled, I started playing as soon as the weather allowed." Wittenberg said Weber's work ethic over the past 2 years has been impressive. "Her technique is solid," Wittenberg said. "Over the past 2 years, she has gotten much stronger and has definitely improved her stamina, speed, and strength. With the help of her coaches at the Blackhawk Tennis Club in Waterloo, she has also developed her match strategies. These strategies will help her mental aspect of the game." Weber credits much of her success to her older sister, Belle, a senior on the team. The sisters combined for a 7-6 doubles record in 2019. Belle Weber has committed to play beach volleyball in college at Missouri State. Quote, Having my older sister as my doubles partner is great, Alexa said. There are a lot of benefits from being siblings and doubles partners. Communication is one of the most important things in doubles, and because we are sisters, we understand each other better to adjust quicker during matches. I look up to my sister. She is admirable in her character and dedication to her own sport, beach volleyball. I have grown up watching her love for the game and how hard she continues to work. It has been important to me to find that love for myself. Unquote. Alexa is unsure if college tennis will be part of her future. She plans on majoring in biology and pre-med. I think playing tennis has helped me grow into the person I want to become, she said. Tennis has taught me a lot about teamwork, leadership, and how to be successful on and off the court. Right now, I want to focus on a good high school season, and I hope I can help my team have a successful year. In Girls Tennis 2021, Teams and Players to Watch. Cedar Rapids Xavier. The Saints were the Class 1A state champions in 2019, defeating Waterloo Columbus in the title match. Three members of that team returned for coach Matt Foxhoven. Senior Miyako Coffey, who teamed with Emily Jasper to win the doubles title in 2019, will likely go for a singles title this time around. She is committed to NCAA Division III nationally ranked Hope College in Holland, Michigan. Also back from the state title team are juniors Courtney Carstensen and Allie Berger. Quote, "We have girls who have played a lot of tennis in the off season," unquote, Foxhaven said. Iowa City West. Coach Amy Vellerini's Trojans lost to Ames in the 2A title match in 2019. Senior Caroline Chandler and junior Caroline Mascardo were among the top six on that team. Another senior, Audrey Koch, has elected not to play this season after signing to play college basketball at Providence. West will be a young team in 2021. Sophomores Ella DeYoung, Juliana Mascardo, Lydia Chin, Zola Gross, and Lindsay Henkenius, along with freshmen Lily Graham and Maggie Shin, are contenders to be in the lineup. Overall, we are a strong team, but we are a young, inexperienced team, especially since our freshmen missed out on the 2020 season due to COVID, Vellerini said. Union. First-year coach Aaron Wittenberg has a veteran team returning in 2021, headed up by junior Alexa Weber. Other top returners include four seniors, Belle Weber, Madeline Wraith, Sophie Winkleplack, and Ellie Behrens. The one advantage for Wittenberg in her first year is inheriting a team that has all its varsity players back from 2019. Most teams in the NICL are in a rebuilding mode, which should give the Knights an advantage. Players. Courtney Carstensen, Jr., Cedar Rapids, Xavier, finished 19-1 in singles in 2019 and was a key contributor to the Saints' run to the state team title. Caroline Chandler, senior, Iowa City West, regional singles champion and state qualifier in 2019, undefeated in regular season singles duels. Miyako Coffey, senior, Cedar Rapids, Xavier, finished 14-5 in singles in 2019 and was part of 1A state title team and won the 1A doubles title with Emily Jasper. Caroline Mascardo, junior, Iowa City West, undefeated in singles as a freshman in 2019, and she was the state doubles qualifier. Alexa Weber, junior from Union, finished with a 12-7 singles record in 2019. And Catherine Zylstra, sophomore, Cedar Rapids, Washington, a talented player who has yet to play a high school match, will likely play at number one singles for the Warriors. In other news, New U.S. News grad school rankings show losses and gains for Iowa universities by Vanessa Miller. The dateline is Iowa City. A range of graduate programs across Iowa's public universities, again, have earned spots on the esteemed U.S. News and World Report's best graduate school rankings, with some ticking up their respective lists and others following amid unparalleled circumstances facing higher education. U.S. News's 2022 Best Graduate Schools edition, made public Tuesday, evaluated graduate programs and specialties offered at hundreds of campuses nationally, including those in the 6 most popular fields of study: business, law, medicine, nursing, engineering, and education. At the University of Iowa, its law ranking fell 2 slots to number 29. Its Master's of Nursing program ranked number 23, also down 2. Education ranked number 48, 1 place below last year. Engineering ranked number 84, down 10 spots. Its medical research program ranked number 39, down 5 spots, and its primary care medicine ranking slipping to 2 spots to number 22. Because UI in 2017 announced it was retiring its full-time professional Master's of Business Administration program to focus on more part-time offerings, it no longer has a full-time MBA ranking. UI's part-time business program ranked number 35, up 1 from last year. Iowa State University's full-time business program climbed 3 spots to number 50, although its part-time program tumbled 33 spots from number 112 to number 145. Its overall engineering ranking tied for number 47, down 4 from last year, with its previously top-ranked engineering agriculture program slipping to number 2. But ISU's education program improved 21 spots to number 91, and University of Northern Iowa ranked number 136 in education after failing to make the list last year. Among the top categories, UNI also ranked number 158 for its part-time business program, the same as last year. All three, collectively, ranked in dozens of programs and specialties, including smaller ones, with UI boasting 63 ranked graduate or professional colleges and programs of its 151 total, including 10 in the top 10. The data for the rankings in all 6 disciplines came from statistical surveys of more than 2,125 programs and from reputation surveys sent to more than 23,000 academics and professionals conducted in the fall of 2020 and early 2021, according to U.S. News. In Eastern Iowa Briefs, Riverside. Tickets for Maddie Pop concert go on sale Friday. American Idol Season 16 winner Maddie Pop will be performing at 7 p.m. June 12th at the Riverside Casino Event Center. Cost per person is $27 or $37. Tickets will be sold by pod, and the entire pod must be purchased. There is a single pod option as well as sets of 2, 4, or 6. Tickets go on sale at 10 a.m. Friday at the casino. Online at tickets.riversidecasinoandresort.com. Maddie Pop, or by calling 1-877-677-3456. Pop, a 23-year-old singer-songwriter from Clarksville, Iowa, is the season 16 winner of American Idol. She fell in love with music at a young age, learning to play guitar, ukulele, and piano. In 2016, Pop released her debut album, Songs from the Basement, which she wrote, produced, and recorded alongside her father. After years of performing locally in Iowa, she decided to audition for American Idol and ultimately won. In Maquoketa, sign up for Prairie Walk at Hamilton Codfish Hollow. Interested in plants and taking a glimpse at natural Iowa? Join Ray Hamilton and Jackson County Conservation for a guided walk through the high-quality Hamilton Prairie on Tuesday at 6 p.m. Hamilton will share his knowledge of prairie plants and native pollinators. This area has been managed as a local biological preserve for 34 years and is home to a unique and diverse set of native plants. It is recommended that participants wear walking shoes and long pants and dress for the weather. Registration is required at least 48 hours in advance, and participants are asked to practice social distancing. Parking is on 288th Street, Maquoketa, across the street from Codfish Hollow Barnstormers. For more information or to sign up, contact Jackson County Conservation at 563-652-3783 or tony@jacksonccb.com. In Dyersville, Field of Dreams to honor first responders in July fundraiser. Go the Distance Baseball and the Chicago Police Memorial Foundation are announcing their second annual First Responders Appreciation Day fundraiser event being held July 10th at the Field of Dreams movie site. Fans are invited to show their appreciation for first responders with a day of fun, family, and baseball. Gates open at noon, and the day starts with an appearance by the legendary Ghost Players, presenting The Greatest Show on Dirt, featuring their famous comedic fan interactive routine. First responders baseball clubs from Dallas, Chicago, and New York will then face off in a pair of seven-inning baseball games beginning at 2:30 p.m., followed by live music from Jake Dodds. The day's festivities also include half-off home tour tickets and a silent auction. Capping off the evening is a showing of Field of Dreams Under the Stars. Active and retired first responders will receive free admission by providing their badge or proof of ID. Proceeds will go toward the Dubuque County Emergency Responder Training Facility and Chicago Police Memorial Foundation. To view the full event itinerary and purchase tickets, visit fieldofdreamsmoviesite.com/firstresponders or call 563-587-8404. Linn County Dems reelect Nillis chairman. The dateline is Cedar Rapids. Brett Nillis of Cedar Rapids has been elected to a fifth term as chairman of the Linn County Democratic Party. Nillis and other members of the county's organization's executive committee were elected at its biennial meeting following the 2021 off-year caucuses, March 24th. At a virtual meeting, the Central Committee also re-elected Valerie Smith as the first vice chairman, Brianna Oxley as secretary, and Susan Elliott Bryan as treasurer. Newly elected were Peggy Stover as the second vice chairwoman, and Philip Platts as finance secretary, responsible for fundraising. The party's focus will continue to be on electing Democrats to county, state, and federal offices, quote, who support education, improving the environment and the lives of those in our community through higher minimum wages and health care for all, unquote, Nillis said. Bosnian fugitive wanted for military killing arrested in Iowa. By Ryan J. Foley. Dateline Iowa City. A former Bosnian soldier who fled custody while awaiting trial for murder in the 1994 killing of a fellow military officer has been arrested and jailed in Iowa after living in the U.S. for decades. Federal agents arrested Davad Pajetovic in Des Moines on March 1st following a formal extradition request from Bosnia-Herzegovina, court documents show. The 58-year-old remains in custody, and a status conference on his case is scheduled for today. And that does it for today's reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Wednesday, March 31st, 2021. I'm your reader, Catherine Moyers. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thank you for listening. Thank you.
From the Bureau of Economic Geology, this is Earth Date. A decade ago, there were typically 20 earthquakes a year that were large enough to feel in the central and eastern U.S. But in 2015, there were over 1,000 of them. Why? It's mostly because we're pumping more water into the ground. The boom in U.S. oil and gas production over the last decade has brought many more oil wells, which also produce water. Most is naturally occurring in the formation, and some was injected by operators to allow or improve the recovery of oil and gas. In both cases, the water will likely have picked up salt and other minerals from the rock, making it many times saltier than seawater. Operators may re-inject this water to continue to liberate oil and gas. But more often, there's too much to handle. So it's trucked or piped to disposal wells, where it's pumped down into deep saltwater reservoirs. Adding large volumes of wastewater increases the pressure in these rock formations, which can allow natural faults to slip more easily than they normally would, causing earthquakes. To address these quakes, regulators and the petroleum industry are monitoring disposal wells and shutting down those that could cause damaging seismic activity. And they now think that managing wastewater injection more carefully should help. There's still more work to be done, and university research centers, like the Bureau of Economic Geology, are conducting major studies with the aim of minimizing the risk of earthquakes while maintaining the benefits of domestic energy production. For Earth Date, I'm Scott Tinker.
Earth Date is produced by the Bureau of Economic Geology at the University of Texas at Austin, with support from Schlumberger, helping oil and gas companies increase production and efficiency while lowering environmental impact. You can hear more Earth Date stories at earthdate.org.